done.
Well, then. What else? That's right. So the next step is, well, okay, so grills. Grills are the stupidest things in loudspeakers.
I hate grills. Bar none. They're ugly.
They perform no useful function except keeping children and cats off your speakers. My advice is... Hello, this is Not an Audiophile, episode 9. Today I interview myself. No, that's not quite true. Sharon's here. Sharon's going to interview me. We're going to talk about the new Delacorde 70S, which I have been working on and off on for some years, actually. But we have finally got it finalised and are displaying it and releasing it, for that matter, at the StereoNet Australian Hi-Fi Show in Melbourne at Albert Park in the next few days. Sharon, how are you going?
I'm good. How are you going?
Oh, I'm going good. So you're going to be the host today.
I'm going to be the question asker.
The question asker. Well, would you like to ask the first question?
Sure. Tell me, as a small manufacturer for Delacorde, you've already got 3 loudspeaker models. Why do you need another?
Oh, well, you always need another. You can never have too many loudspeakers, otherwise no one would be making loudspeakers because the world has thousands of them, right?
So, right.
Like beyond thousands. No, there's a particular goal that I had in mind, which was building a loudspeaker in Australia, of course, as I do in our own factory, but the design goal being only for performance. Performance is the number one thing, with the second goal being the lowest possible cost. So for that, you know, different priorities suddenly become a priority.
So this new, brand new loudspeaker that you're revealing at the Melbourne Hi-Fi Show on the 11th to the 13th of October, this is completely different to the other 3 models, or it has similarities?
Nice plug you got in there for the show. Completely different. And I could go on and on about the differences, but it's best that I don't, because it'll take hours. Because the reality is that designing a loudspeaker, there are so many questions, so many things to think about, so many tiny aspects and large aspects. So in this case, if you want to increase the performance, you're going to have to design with performance only in mind. That's going to be the only way. So a lot of modern loudspeakers have performance, I would suggest, as a low priority. That sounds ridiculous.
You're saying that a lot of other loudspeakers are made to look pretty, and that's where most of their money goes.
That's part of it. It's just it's probably more technically fundamental than that, where, you know, there are outrageous examples where a speaker is 6 or 8 foot tall and has 27 drive units on the front. I mean, clearly that is utterly ridiculous. That is not how you get better performance. It's how you make a crazy looking speaker. The best loudspeaker is one with one drive unit. That, if in an ideal world, you would have one drive unit that would go from 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz, would have perfect dispersion on and off axis, well controlled across the whole range of its output. So that's the ideal goal. There's zero box resonance. I'm speaking fast because I want to cover a lot of stuff. There's so many things, but that is, everyone knows that's the ideal loudspeaker, one that has these imaginary attributes. Now, that never happens in the real world. But so then you want to refine, well, what's the laundry list of the most important design attributes?
What's the laundry list if you're designing a loudspeaker?
I think it's something, I don't know, it's an Americanism which we seem to be using more than we should, which something to do with going to the laundry. I mean, I really don't know.
What
is on the list?
What's the important list of things that you need to tick off as a loudspeaker designer?
Oh, I can't answer that question. But it's too long. But what Okay, maybe we'll just talk about this model and maybe versus the other three models we currently have. So there's the little FR35, which is kind of like a sort of a modern interpretation of the classic BBC LS35A, using slightly different materials and cabinet vibration reduction ideas, but similar drive unit sizes, same 19mm, 20mm soft dome tweeter, same 5.25-inch base mid, out of similar materials. Sounds a little different because we've applied a slightly different priority as far as how we wanted it to sound, because it's more speaker designed for music, whereas the 35A was originally designed sort of for mainly voice monitoring in a small environment.
So it's an improvement on the LS35A.
It's an improvement, but it's that would depend on your outlook. So you've got that, and that does the job well, and then that works rather well placed on top of the FR20 base module to make it full range and active. So that becomes a bigger, I mean, it's a huge sounding loudspeaker in a relatively small footprint.
Yeah, so this is the FR2035 is a three-way with two pieces.
Separate enclosures.
Monitor on the top and the bass module on the bottom.
Well, the goal there was to reduce cabinet issues, vibrations, resonances, what have you, in the frequency ranges that those two speakers output. So the idea was to get the resonances in the small box as low as possible and the resonances in the bass box probably higher than the bass range that it's actually outputting. And it was also about footprint. It's quite narrow. It's deep. Doesn't take up much space. And that's what a lot of modern speakers are trying to do. You know, narrow-fronted, deep, tall floor standards are all about getting box volume but not width. But this is where the newer model comes in. But before we talk about the new model, let me just cover the FR6, which is our original better-known loudspeaker.
That one won a couple of awards, right?
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, look, it's a pretty good loudspeaker, to say the least, I think. It does well on the bass because it's an isobaric design, so two drive units doing the job of one. It has great extension and for its size of enclosure. It uses a passive radiator on the back to avoid the volume that a port takes up and the turbulence that a small or too small a port would create. So that goal, that design goal for the FR6 was the smallest box with the greatest bass extension.
And that's a classic look box.
Yeah, it is what people think a speaker looks like. So the new, and we're glossing over those attributes of those three models to some degree because we want to move on to the new one. Because
so the new one is different again. It sounds different, looks different.
It sounds, okay, here's the thing. Clean sheet of paper, performance is the absolute goal, appearance, not a priority at all. So there's your biggest difference.
Although I have seen it and I really, really like the way it looks.
Well, that's great, and thank you for saying that, Sharon. That $50 I gave you earlier was well spent. But the reality is it may or may not be anyone's cup of tea to look at, but it really sounds great. And
but
that's
then,
because
There's no guarantee that any loudspeaker is going to be everybody's cup of tea.
No, absolutely not. No, everyone likes a different thing, and I'm fine with that. But the overriding goal was sound quality, so I didn't care how it looked, which is a
ridiculous thing to say.
No, but it's a pleasure because you don't have to. Because the reality is, the little 35A homage is it's the same size and it looks like a slightly better or more modern proportioned 35A, and it's quite cute and nice. Comes in premium veneers. It's very well made, if I say so myself, and it sounds pretty good, and it's a bit sharper price than a 35A, and it's a great loudspeaker. But the performance, believe it or not, was not the number one goal. The number one goal was to actually make it look a bit like a 35A. Now
and
that's
to make it integrate for the 2035 and make
it and make it the right size to fit on the base module. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That was always in mind, even at the start. The FR6, the goal was that it looked well, very well finished, that it looked as well made as any other loudspeaker, and it looked fairly normal. I'm doing inverted comma marks. Classic in the sense of what loudspeakers have been since the early 90s. So narrower than the depth, and in the case of a stand mount, this is a fairly large stand mount, but it's not a big box. Now, this new speaker, to cut back to the chase, is, well, let's just cut to the chase. It's a wider baffle. It's a it's called the 70S, and the play on 70S is, of course, the 70s. So it is in the early 70s, and here we get to the philosophy of why it is the way it is. The 70s loudspeakers were simpler in design. It was an experimental time. They were somewhat random, but they were all similar in that they were wider than they were deep, as a general rule, not all, but many. They had larger drive units, which is maybe one of the reasons why they were wider. They had, in many cases, pretty mediocre cone tweeters that could go quite low, and so a simple crossover was all that was required. Now, the advantage of that, the advantage is a simple crossover, but the sound is quite often a bit coloured, not super accurate, but it has this certain charm, this ease, this relaxing nature, and people, humans, can detect that, and they display that desire for that sound in the strangest of ways by wanting to restore radiograms and other awful speakers from the late 60s and early 70s, which
seems to be a current trend.
Which is, well, it's been around for a while, but the point is you listen, and here's the thing, you listen to AM radio on a valve radiogram through the full range 8-inch or 6x9 or 7x10 oval speakers, and you go, that is not high fidelity.
Right.
But it has this ease, this charm, and the charm is the relaxing, it's kind of like listening to live music from a distance nature, where all of the top end is dissipated.
So you're saying that the new speaker is a relaxed hark back to the 70s style, simple, live from a distance kind of sound.
Live from a distance, yeah. Not a nightclub, just a nightclub with no bass.
You didn't pay to get in. You stood outside the fence and heard it from
something
there.
Like that. Yeah. But the answer is no, it's not. But the thought is absolutely to capture the ease, the lack of fatigue, the simple sound that washes over you, and you don't have to think about it, and it doesn't immediately sound hi-fi, although, you know, maybe there's a bit of that, because the new speaker is quite uncoloured. Like, we've been throwing around the on-axis and some of the frequency response measurements from it. This morning I did up a chart with the off-axis, some off-axis measurements as well. It's incredibly smooth. But let me get to why that's the case. But the original motivation, though, was the wide baffle. I initially thought bigger cones. This design originally started 3 or 4 years ago using a 10-inch base unit. And the reality is...
So what size base unit does it have?
Well, the new one is a 6.5. So we've got a box that's big enough to put a 10-inch driver in it, but it's actually got a 6.5-inch drive unit in it. And there's the people listening who know a bit about loudspeaker design will know exactly why I've chosen to do that, because the 10-inch, a 10-inch two-way is kind of almost impossible to make work. So you can, and that's where I came unstuck. So this design is a spin-off of two loudspeakers that I've actually done before. 10-inch 2A, which never made it to production, and our first production speaker, the M6, which, I mean, M kind of stood for monitor. It was quite an accurate loudspeaker, but at the core of its design was that it had a particular drive unit in it with a paper cone, has a very smooth response, well north of its usual pass band, no nasty breakup modes, and the enclosure was built from plywood, birch ply.
Okay, so birch ply instead of veneer, which is what you've used veneer, on the others.
No, well, yeah, I've used a veneered MDF.
Yeah.
So we could talk about MDF versus plywood. We could talk about paper cones versus hard aluminium or beryllium or, magnesium or ceramic or all of these.
Well, let's talk about that. The difference between what you've used, the birch ply, and an MDF, which is what's used on most other speakers.
Absolutely. MDF is used, I would say, by 99% of the world's loudspeakers at any price.
Right.
There are, of course, exceptions. At the super high end, there's aluminium, notably at the moment, is in fashion, and various composite materials, the likes of Wilson Audio use, etc., which are very expensive to manufacture with, and reportedly have reduced resonances, but at the cost of, in most cases, enormous cost, but also weight. So that's not a perfect answer either. So plywood versus MDF. Well, MDF is quite heavy. It's a sort of it's a fake material, right? It's basically sawdust, very fine wood dust, and glue or resin.
Okay.
Whereas plywood's wood. It's as simple as that. Plywood is timber, and it's not full of resin. It is glued together in layers, and birch plywood or multi-ply or whatever people want to call it is usually about a 1.2 to 1.6 millimeter thick veneer cross-laminated for however many veneers you need to make up the thickness of the board.
Okay.
So it's got a completely different set of properties to MDF. Now, MDF is a wonderful material. I've always liked MDF. It's so good to machine. It's so good to paint. You know, if you want to do a painted box in a high gloss lacquer finish, it's the stuff that you want to use. It primes beautifully. It sands, it sands well enough, but then once you prime it, well, that you've got this eggshell of paint on it. But
the birch plywood then that you've used on the new 70S model is more difficult to use, more expensive to buy. Why use it then over the MDF?
Well, here's the key thing, right? So if you prioritise performance, so the sound quality is your number one goal, not your pretendy marketing goal, but your real goal in the design, you will, of course, use birch ply or some premium plywood. It's sometimes made out of other timbers, and we are experimenting with other timbers at the moment, which we'll talk about in a future podcast. But for the moment, it's birch ply, usually made on the other side of the planet, out of birch, which is impressively light hardwood. So and I've forgotten what the question was. Oh, the interesting thing.
The question is, why use birch ply? Okay, it's more expensive, more difficult than MDF, which is what everybody else uses.
Doesn't cost any more money.
Right.
So here's why it doesn't cost any more money. It's actually, compared with MDF, it's five times the price. So birch ply is five times the price of MDF. MDF is dirt cheap. Even in Australia, we make tons of it. Every kitchen's made out of it. Well, every good quality kitchen. Obviously, particle board is what
poor quality kitchens
are made from. But, I mean, particle board, moisture resistant, is actually quite an okay material. And probably in some ways better for building loudspeakers. But let's not go there just at the moment. Because it's got actually more wood structure to it. But get back to MDF, which is what loudspeakers mean.
Let's not add another timber.
MDF's a fifth of the price until you put a fancy veneer on it. So to make MDF saleable and to make it look like something, you can either paint it or you can veneer it. And veneers, if you're making loudspeakers in Australia and using Australian materials, is the same price, if not more expensive, than birch ply. In fact, somewhat more expensive. So, now, we use it because we want the box to look pretty normally, and retailers like it, customers like it. We would not be selling loudspeakers through hi-fi dealers if we were making boxes out of plain plywood, which is, to wind back, is what the M6 was. It was a stained and clear-coated plywood box, which I thought looked okay, but a number of dealers very quickly made me aware, that looks like shite. Don't come back here with that. You've got to make it look pretty. And then the FR6 was invented. So, and the reason why I didn't veneer the plywood the M6 was made out of and do that was because then you're talking huge amounts of money. Right. So
the new model then is made from birch plywood because it sounds better?
Well, to get back to that, so the structure, so it's actual timber. Now, people will say, oh, you don't make speakers out of real wood because it's all different and it's got resonances and knots in it and you don't want to, and they're right. But all of that goes away with plywood, so you gain incredible strength and stiffness, but it's incredibly light because it's not full of resin. So the board is bits of wood cross-laid, you know, to create this very stiff structure of whatever thickness you need. And we use quite a thin plywood because that's another design attribute that I like, and we'll get to that. But so you end up with this board that I'd say is about two-thirds of the weight of MDF, just based on how much muscle power is required to lift a sheet onto the router. And never actually weighed it, but it's dramatically less. And dramatically stiffer. It doesn't move, it doesn't bow. And maybe it does eventually, you know, under difficult, you know, Australian humidity, high humidity conditions. But it's very stable compared with MDF. So the point is, it absorbs energy, I guess, the same amount of energy off the back of the drive unit as MDF. But it doesn't do much with it. It doesn't weigh as much, and you can control the resonances in a way where you can both vary the resonant frequencies of the panels quite easily with damping materials. And because it does ring a bit, you know, with it undamped, it rings kind of more than MDF because MDF is internally damped with all that resin.
Right.
I don't want to get too bogged down in this, but if you... The result with an MDF box is it always has a certain... You know, it just does. It has a certain boxiness to it. It sounds a bit leaden. It has a certain tone in the vocal range, probably in the lower to mid part of the, well, just the vocal range, you know, sort of, you know, 200 to 600 hertz or something in that range. And that's where most of the resonances are. And they, I don't know, I've compared the same loudspeaker design with the two different materials. The plywood is so much better. You can hear, it just doesn't sound, it doesn't have the sound of a box. It doesn't sound like it's in a box.
Right. So we're not hearing the box, we're hearing the music.
You're hearing the sound that's coming off the drive units on the front of the box.
Okay. Isn't that what speakers are supposed to do,
well,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, in an ideal world. But you're also hearing diffraction, reflection, what have you, off the front of the box, which is, we address those issues with the wider baffle to some degree. And we're, of course, hearing reflections off other parts of the room. So you've still got your room problems, but that's where the wider box comes in as well. But the to wind back and finish, put a line under the MDF versus birch ply thing, because everyone would naturally be saying, oh, no, this guy's a lunatic. Clearly, you know, the likes of XYZ speaker manufacturer, insert name of favourite speaker manufacturer of this particular audio file, and surely, you know, like they use MDF because it's the best solution. No, they just don't. I'm sorry. MDF is so easy to machine, so inexpensive to buy. And if you're building speakers in Europe or China, the veneers are nowhere near as expensive as they are here. So let's take China, because most, let's face it, most speakers under $10,000 are made in China. The vast majority, certainly any manufacturer with any volume, is manufacturing in China or somewhere in Southeast Asia where materials are just cheaper. So they do it because it's cheaper, and it's quite effective and it's consistent, but like a lot of things, it's not the perfect answer, but it is the convenient answer. So plywood is a pain to machine. It requires nice sharp tooling, MDF you can machine quite effectively with blunt bits, get away, just plough on through and then sand off the edge. This does not happen with plywood. It'll just tear through the board. So you need to machine, keep the machine in tip-top condition with fresh machining bits, nice and sharp.
So because you need to tool it. Stereotech manufactures your boxes, your loudspeaker cabinets for Delacorde, then you're aware of these things about the timber work that perhaps other manufacturers wouldn't be because they don't get involved in the actual manufacture of the cabinetry.
I think, yeah, absolutely. Now, there, of course, are a few speaker makers who make their own boxes. I mean, notably, locally, Cricks would be, the obvious comparison. I mean, we're sort of the same manufacturer, except they're 1,000 times bigger than we are, if not 10,000 times bigger. But they may, to my knowledge, use plywood. I don't know. But I know in their hi-fi home hi-fi speakers, they're, I believe, all MDF. And it's... Hey, we've been using it as well. It's great material.
But because you're a bespoke style, artisan style, quotation marks, manufacturer, you can do the plywood option and get a better sound.
We can use whatever we want. Now, yeah. It depends on our priorities. Now, in this case, like I've mentioned a few times, the appearance of the box is irrelevant. So we're not going to spend money on veneers.
The appearance of the box.
No.
The appearance of the design of the box, the design of the loudspeaker, the way it looks, is a particular look, which nobody will see until the show when we take it out of the box for the first time. But I think people will like the way it looks.
Yeah, that's fine. That's a decent point, and that's one. It's okay for you to like the look of it. What I'm trying to draw attention to is that I didn't care what it looked like because this was a design exercise in the best possible sound for the least possible cost, but the product being made in this country.
Right. So you've managed to make a less expensive speaker with better sound than you would expect from a more expensive speaker.
Well, that's, I guess, always the goal, but it gets easier if you throw away the aesthetic values because... So we've already said that birch ply costs less than MDF with a veneer on it. So first box ticked. So as far as the materials to build the enclosure from, we now have a better material, tricky to work with, but when you optimise it, both the construction and the internal dampening of the panels, you get an amazing sounding box. So job done.
Right. So what else have you done?
Well, what else? That's right. So the next step is, grills. Grills are the stupidest things in loudspeakers.
I hate grills. Bar none. Grills, ugly.
They perform no useful function except keeping children and cats off your speakers. My advice is throw a tea towel
lock
over
up
them
your
or
cats.
Do something. Or lock up your children, put them in the soundproof cage. Whatever. The point is that if that wasn't meant seriously, of course. There is no such thing, I don't think. Timu or something has a soundproof child cage. I don't know. But anyhow, the point is the...
It'll be cheap.
Grills, it would be cheap. You'd probably get three for $12. I don't know. Anyhow, and free freight on your first order. So the grill's gone because...
No grill.
Grills can have their uses if you design the box to work with the grill and sound best with the grill on, that's fine, and they're an okay thing. It raises the cost of the box, though, and then when you take the grill off, it doesn't sound as good. If you design the box to have no grill and sound at its best, i.e. the grill's off, the loudspeaker sounds correct as per the designer's intentions, as soon as you put the grill on, it doesn't sound as good. And the difference can be quite large. And the amount of loudspeakers that work well with the grill off, particularly in a low volume model where there's no plastic mouldings or high tech grills that have had their cost reduced to nothing by making 50,000 pairs, if we ignore all those, there's very few smaller brands, and I probably don't need to mention them, but the Spender, Harbeth, PMCs of the world. Very rarely would they be designed to work, in in both scenarios. There'll either be grill on, in the case of, I think, well, the LS35A works best with its grill on, for instance.
Yep.
And most are designed for work best with a grill off. So grills are gone.
So no grills.
So there's a saving. There's just 10% saving straight away. The next step is fancy terminals. Now, you know, it's a bit of a pet subject of mine. I appreciate the terminals that we use normally are the ETI, you know, which is a largely locally crafted, certainly locally designed binding post that's exceptionally good, world standard, very well priced actually for what they are. And that's why we use them. They're local and they're sharply priced for that kind of, you know, solid copper, you know, machine from copper, not just some gold-plated piece of tin or brass or whatever. They're a very high-quality binding post, and there's certainly a small advantage in performance from using them. Plus, you know, you can put bigger cables on them, and there's other practical benefits.
So we're not using ETI on the new model?
No, absolutely not. We're still using a high-quality terminal post that's made in the UK, but we're not using the ETI one. We're using a high-volume production one. It's an old design, probably from the 70s.
Okay.
So it looks a bit 70s, but actually it works pretty well. No, it's not made from solid copper.
So we haven't lost, you haven't lost any, you know, of the high-grade musical sound that you're trying to get out of this speaker by using slightly less expensive posts.
I think the trade-off is very small, and I think like a lot of things, you know, so we're using quite an expensive tweeter, so you know that's where the money has been spent to gain a much bigger improvement in performance than you would get by using a less expensive tweeter but a more expensive post. So it's a case of priorities.
Yep.
So the tweeter, and we'd be jumping sideways to talk about that yet, so I won't. But I've actually made a list here for my own, just to jog my memory.
So we've gone birch plywood.
Birch ply because it's actually no cheaper grills. Than MDF with no veneer. With veneer, we've no grills.
We've gone
No fancy terminals.
No fancy terminals. So what else have you done to keep the price low but the quality of sound high the new 70S?
Well, the biggest cost of designing any loudspeaker is research and development. So the R&D was already done. So tick. We've taken sort of sunken costs in the development of the 10-inch two-way that doesn't even have a model number. And I forget what I was going to call it, but something unimaginative like M10, I think, from memory. And then which I spent about a year on and off, kind of getting not nowhere, but certainly understanding the problems of melding a 10-inch or a large diaphragm driver that's pretty much lost its off-axis output by 1,500, 2,000 hertz, and trying to meld that with the tweeter that is, you know, doing the opposite. It just doesn't work. You create an enormous dip in the off-axis response and the power response in the room, the all-encompassing just general output power of the speaker over a broad range of listening angles is lumpy and unpleasant. So
right.
Some manufacturers managed to pull it off, but this is where we come back to the wide baffle. The ones that have been most successful have used a very wide front baffle. So baffle meaning literally that just the front of the box.
Mm.
And so they, you know, if the baffle's 3 foot wide or a metre wide, to use apparently the new dimension measurement methodologies rather than feet, is, you know, you get this advantage in a number of areas. But I'm still not sure that that really helps with the off-axis performance at around 1.5-2K. So I don't know, but they make it work. But they do one thing that we've done as well, which is you use a tweeter that's slightly horn-loaded. So that actually reduces the off-axis output of the tweeter at the lower end of its range. So you can more easily meld it via the crossover to the output of your larger base mid-range driver, and of course that's why we changed it to a 6.5 rather than a 10, because the 6.5 has is quite an even response up a little bit higher. And so, in fact, we've successfully crossed it over at 3,000 hertz, 3K on the dot to this, some would call it a wave-guided tweeter. It's a 25 mil soft dome, which is, you know, the most probably common tweeter on the planet these days, and that works really well. I mean, it makes the bit of difference. Plus, we've got the wide baffle, which we'll come to in a second as to how that really helps, and we've set the tweeter in flush, but the base mid sits on the surface of the baffle, just trying to get a bit more of a time alignment thing happening.
Right. So, and you've heard these, and you like the way they sound with all of these changes that you've made.
Them because I designed them, yes.
Yeah. You've heard the finished product.
Yeah.
And they sound pretty damn good.
Well, I want to go on about what I would like people to do if they're hearing this podcast and they're going to the show, or in fact they're not going to the show, is give me a call or something and we'll chat about it. But we certainly can send them out to you to have a listen. But the because there's another aspect of this price thing that I want to talk about, which is how we actually go about selling them. Because the biggest cost is R&D. The second biggest cost is just how the product is marketed and sold.
So you did your R&D over years and years and other speakers and other, you know, other models and other things. So the R&D was done. You just made it better.
Basically, I looked up my notes from those two designs, went back through the crossover designs for them and went, why did I do it like that? and then with my somewhat greater success with the current production models, applied some of those ideas. But I think I've skipped ahead. I was talking about, so we used a 6.5 inch, I said that, 3000 hertz crossover, yeah. We will have a break because I've forgotten where I was up to.
Okay.
Sorry, folks, back in a second.
So we're back, not an audio file, the podcast, and today we're talking to Andrew Hutchison, who is the designer and manufacturer of Delacord range of loudspeakers. And we've been talking about the new model, the 70S, which is being unveiled for the first time at the Melbourne Hi-Fi Show, 11 to 13 October. And we were talking about costs and how costs have been minimised in the 70S, but the sound quality has been maximised. Andrew?
Yes, thank you, Sharon. Yeah, I just checking my notes because, you know, I've got all these complex, unreadable handwritten notes. We were talking about all of the ways that we'd gone, stuff it, let's remove all these fancy accoutrements and just go for performance.
So do we have bling?
Well, we've got rid of the bling as well. Our loudspeakers generally don't have much bling, and most low-volume loudspeakers don't. Bling is not really possible when you are making 100 pairs of loudspeakers a year. If you're making 10,000 or 100,000, you can have all sorts of fancy, you know, faux gold-plated plastic rings and trim rings and rubber parts and things that clip on here and press in there, and certainly makes for excitement for the poor person who has to pull it apart and repair it someday, because pulling all these things back out is almost impossible without damaging them, and that's another story. It's also not immediately obvious how the speaker comes apart, which is always exciting too. So, but I guess speakers are generally reliable, but the small volume ones generally are very reliable because they're made from premium parts, because that's basically all you've got access to. So yeah, no trim rings and bits and pieces.
No shiny bits. Okay.
So, yeah, veneer brings nothing to the table. And, yeah, I'm just going to hark back. I forgot to mention, and this is a funny fact, or fun fact.
Ooh,
about
fun it, fact.
A fun fact about MDF versus plywood is that you can suck air through MDF. You know, MDF, because you mentioned the veneer doesn't affect anything. Well, what the veneer does is it seals the box. So an unveneered MDF box actually is not airtight, because MDF is completely porous.
Right.
You could connect an air compressor up via a bike valve or something to a MDF speaker box and blank off the drive unit hole so that they don't just push out, and pump it up, and you'd never, if you pump it up like a tire, is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Say you pump it up to 50.
I have a vision of you pumping you up pump, a loudspeaker box.
It's actually a thing that I've done. So you pump up a box.
Right.
Then you pump it up to tire pressure, say 30, 40 psi. Don't ask me what that is in millibars or.
So you're saying the MDF will leak?
Oh, it won't hold pressure for more than a tenth of a second.
Right.
So it's completely porous.
Plywood is different to that.
Plywood is completely sealed.
So if you pumped a plywood speaker box full of air from a bike pump, it would hold pressure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Not for forever and not for very long, but longer than MDF, which is right. completely porous. So, of course, the MDF is ultimately made airtight by painting it or veneering it, or both, of course, because right. you're putting a clear coat over the veneer. But it's an interesting thing that MDF by itself is not even airtight, so clearly unusable for loudspeakers.
Yeah. So what have you done then with the new 70S from the birch ply that isn't just plain birch ply? You haven't veneered it.
No, we have. What we've done is we've sealed it. And sanded it and painted it with just clear lacquer, and so it looks quite nice.
Looks a little bit retro.
It looks a little, what it is. It's actually quite a nice. I was going to say semi-industrial. I mean, there's a look that you see in interior design where people use paint clear-coated plywood as a sort of an architectural feature, I guess, quite often in ceilings. Soffits, things like that. This is, and there was a fad in the 70s, maybe building kitchens out of plywood. You know, it's a look.
It's a good look.
It's a boat interior look in a really poor person's boat. It, you know, with no fancy veneers, but it is.
It's almost a Scandi.
It's actually
look.
No such thing as a poor person's boat when you think about
no.
it. No. People well, who, they probably they are might poor. End up poor.
They yeah, are yeah, poor now. Yeah, they own a boat. Poor, they yeah. weren't poor when they bought the boat. Yeah. I think it's a quite a Scandi look. It's very. It comes up very light, and it works very nicely in interiors where you have. Light timbers, whites, natural look, you know, maybe some cane or some, you know, greys or whatever. But it's, I like the look of it. I like the way it's slightly retro, slightly vintage. It's an aesthetic that I like. I think other people will like it too.
Well,
and,
you know,
and not to be put off by the fact that it's not fancy. It doesn't have to be fancy.
Well, no, because it's to make music. And to get back to that, it does a hell of a nice job. So let's just summarise the actual key features that, rather than save cost, actually make it sound good. And maybe we should have done this first. So the wide baffle thing. Okay, so diffraction on a front baffle is a problem. Basically, the change of pressure, I guess, as the sound meets the edge of the front of the box actually causes reflection, and which we call diffraction, but really it's kind of just reflection. And so because it's such a short period or short distance from the tweeter and mid-range driver to the edge of the box on a normal narrow baffle box, it happens both at a high frequency and because it's at a higher frequency, it's more ruining of the sweetness of the sound, just to sum up the effect, but also the quality of the stereo imaging. So when you go to a wider baffle and perhaps a taller baffle, in this case not taller because it's a large stand mount box, just to clarify that, it's further away, so the diffraction artifacts happen because they create nulls and peaks in the response. They happen at a lower frequency. And then when you achieve that, you are also getting less diffraction because there's less, to some degree, well, less, I don't want to get myself tangled up in a, there's so many things going on. Let me just say that you have less trouble with diffraction if you make the box wider, and that's pretty much a fact. But if you then do what I've done and move the drivers around to sort of, optimize the disturbance to be less less annoying. So if the drivers are mounted symmetrically on the front baffle, you've got bigger troughs and peaks in the response, because it's all happening, well, at least left to right, laterally. If the driver's on the centre line, it's both edges are causing the same problem at the same frequency. So if we move the drivers around a bit,
so this looks model random. Has an off-centre.
It does. It has an asymmetric butt mirror image, which is important, pair. So, the left one, and you set them up with the tweeters on the outside is the way the thing is designed. And so there's a couple of things going on with that. But if you have mirror image, you certainly end up with the same, assuming you're sitting, more or less in the sweet spot, you get the same frequency response from both speakers, and so you get excellent stereo imaging.
Okay, and they don't have to be angled in, do they? They can sit forward.
They have pretty even off-axis response up to about 40 degrees, and then like all speakers, things happen because, that's getting quite a way off-axis. But the point is that you can toe them in a little bit or a lot. That's your preference, but I find them to be lightly towed in, and they work. Oh, the imaging is really... the imaging's great because these diffraction artifacts that are left are at a lower frequency that messes less with the stereo imagery. And it's a less annoying part of the frequency spectrum as well. So it's okay. It's just... But there's also the crossover, right? So we haven't cut any corners on the crossover. So the crossover is no matter what you do with drivers, the baffle size, the box materials, how you set your system up, it doesn't really matter. How good your amp and your turntable, CD player, streamer are, it just doesn't... tape deck. Tuner. It doesn't really matter.
Crossover
is the thing that brings the magic together. You can put a bad crossover
in a perfect box.
Well, it's still just a bad crossover using...
It's still going to get bad sound.
Well, yeah, the crossover has to perfectly combine the output of the two drive units. In this case, it's a two-way, 6.5-inch two-way loudspeaker. It has to combine that output in a way that is both phase correct, frequency response correct, and it... has the correct balance between the output of the two drivers. So this is quite time-consuming to get right. It's the thing that people like Brad Serhan is highly regarded for because
the tweaking of the crossover.
He does a lot of things right, but the thing is it's a skill that he's got. I guess practices some of it. So I've been practicing, and I got better. And so
you can hear the minute differences in changes.
I think the thing is that
there's
umpteen ways to go about it. There's probably 20 different ways you could implement a crossover in a two-way, different steepness of slopes, different topologies, different ways you can equalize aberrations in the response. There's so many... It's a conversation you would have with Brad, and you could run through all of the ways you could do it. So I've gone about it in a very particular way because the goal was to keep the crossover as simple as possible, but to get, as Brad would say, the stitch-up to be perfect. In other words, where the two drivers meet, they do it in a way where they kind of sound the same. So this is where the design of the box... and the choice of drive units is critical. So I've chosen a paper cone bass mid with minimal, if any, nasty breakup modes at higher frequencies than you would normally use it, because this is what happens in a 6.5-inch driver. So a hard cone like aluminium or carbon fiber or what have you has some quite nasty 10, 15... dB spiky bits, probably at 5, 6, 7,000 hertz, which you have to filter out when you implement this crossover. Otherwise, okay, that will sound dreadful. Now, the other... So we've used a paper comb because we get rid of that. Now, yeah, there's a few trade-offs with a paper comb, but fashion is probably the biggest trade-off. It's not fashionable, you know. So, you know, something new is, you know, anything carbon fibre is better than anything else, yeah, right?
But, I mean, you know, all things old are new again, right?
There is that as well. But why is that the case? Why? Because sometimes people hear something old, like a turntable, and go, that's got a real charm to it. I love that. That sounds nice. You know, open reel tape of an analog recording has this ease, this lack of, digital haters would say, lack of digital hash, if you like. It's not as clean. It's not as punchy. It's not as detailed. But it has other qualities. So this paper cone business is a little bit about, yeah, it's a look back to the, it comes back to that desire to get that easy sound, that sort of, that fatigue-free, charming's a terrible word in a way, it doesn't really say much about the balance or the way it sounds or the technical aspects of it, but it does imply that you hear it. It's a bit like you're walking down the street, you hear music, you immediately know whether it's recorded or live. Okay, so that's the difference. Now, the human is so good at picking up all of the flaws in recorded music and played back recorded music that it can easily tell when something's live, right? There's all sorts of reasons which someone like our previous guest, David Spargo, could explain more eloquently because he's a guru of these things. But it's to do with dynamics, lack of distortion, harmonic structure is intact, all of these key things. So this is where a paper cone, well, it gives you a head start. So if you're going to design a speaker for performance, you want to make everything work towards performance. So the wide baffle, the paper cone, it means there's less to deal with in the crossover. So then the next thing is the tweeter. Soft dome tweeter, textile dome, some used to call them a silk dome. I don't think they were ever made from silk. Maybe they were.
Maybe they were.
But they're not anymore. So it has not got some difficult breakup modes outside of its pass band at very high frequencies that we don't have to deal with, and we may or may can't hear because they're above, you know, the human hearing range, but maybe not above your dog's range. I always wonder about beryllium tweeters and dogs. Dog is putting its paws over its ears whenever you turn your pair of focals on. Anyhow.
So we've got the right box.
So we've got the right box, the right driver.
We've got a simple crossover that
We haven't got a simple crossover.
We've got a tricky crossover.
Simple crossovers don't generally work if you're aiming for a smooth, genuinely flat response at various listening angles. So getting back to the live music analogy, so that lack of coloration, we all know what a saxophone sounds like. And when it's amplified, suddenly, of course, it takes on, to some degree, the color of the PA system. If it's played outside, a busker playing a sax is amazing. Some would say it's even better if they're in a tunnel. But, well, it does because it adds, you know, more reverb.
It adds a colour.
So, right. No, colour is not necessarily bad, right? Which, you know, is where I'm getting at, where I'm coming to. So that's not to say our speaker is coloured. It's not. But the crossover, the goal, yes, was to use all these correct ingredients so the crossover hopefully could be as simple as a 70s crossover. Well, that, of course, is just not going to work out because...
It was a different time.
Yes, people were more accepting of a more coloured sound. And by coloured, I mean less even in its response. And obviously the designers had very carefully judged these response anomalies to be as non-annoying to humans as possible. And so I've done a similar thing, but really in the end, just really gotten rid of most of the coloration, but used a crossover frequency that the drivers enjoyed. It worked out well for them, but it also is in at around 3,000 hertz. It's not a bad place to put a crossover if you can get away with it. I find that 1,000, 1,500 is maybe even 2,000 is a danger zone for a crossover in a two-way. I think it sometimes sounds unpleasant. Very hard to get right.
Well, we want pleasant.
So, yeah.
Right?
So 3,000.
Why we're listening to loudspeakers. Yeah. We want pleasant.
So they ended up. So we've basically got. I'm not going to go into the topology of the crossover because it's a secret. But.
Well, the whole thing is a secret until we take the box off it on the 11th of October.
Yeah, but I think when people hear the loudspeaker, they'll go, "Ooh, that's kind of clean and sweet." And very natural sounding, and that was the goal. So that to cut to the chase, finally, that's what the design goal was, a very natural sound, and you achieve that by all of the other things that we've just mentioned.
So it looks good. It sounds,
you're saying it looks
sounds
good.
Amazing. We're taking it to the show. Delacorte is not retailing this loudspeaker, though.
No.
As in through retailers.
Well, yeah. In fact, Delacorte is retailing it.
Delacorte is retailing it.
So here's the final thing. Here's the ad, because we've got to wrap this up. So we're selling it direct, as mentioned, but we're also, here's the twist. We're selling it a couple of different ways.
Because nothing can be simple.
No.
Complex.
I like to make things complicated. Yeah. So you can buy the speaker as a finished product, comes in a box. Comes with a money back guarantee. If you hate the sound of it, you of course send it back in perfect condition and all the other and comply with all the other terms and conditions.
And what Andrew hasn't mentioned is it comes with a custom designed stand.
Well, it's optional. Yeah,
but there is a custom designed stand.
Yeah, but it's optional.
It is optional
because the loudspeaker, and people are going, well, what is this thing? $3,000, $2,000, $10,000. It's $2,999
complete.
Complete. Arrived, well, at your door plus freight.
Plus the custom stand.
And if you need stands, but let's not talk about the stands. People will see those at the show. They'll see them in the follow-up advertising, etc. But you can store records in them. So a bit like certain other stands that are out there, which is quite, I think, a smart idea. It's a wasted space otherwise. So here's the way you can buy the speaker. So you go, well, I don't like the look of your Scandi clear-coated speaker. It looks ridiculous. It's not going to suit my house. Can I have it in another finish? And the answer to that, Henry Ford style, is, yeah, you can have it in any colour you want as long as this is it.
Okay.
So the way around that is to, because you can't have it in black, Henry Ford style, but you can make your own black ones. So what we suggest you do is you buy the less expensive version of the 70S, which is what we call, well, I actually don't know what we call it, but let's say it's called the raw finish version. So it's a fully assembled loudspeaker ready to go. You can plug them in and listen to them.
Comes in a box?
It comes the same way as the normal 70S.
But with raw birch ply.
Raw birch ply.
Rather than the clear coat.
Now, we've designed the speaker so you can pull it apart really easily. You can completely disassemble it with just a few screws. There's no soldering. You know, you just unplug. I mean, we've soldered the wires to the drive units because that's kind of important because for various practical reasons I won't go into. But the other end of that cable plugs into the crossover board. It's a fiberglass crossover board with premium components on it, which I don't think we just talked about that, but it's so boring. Just there's no corners cut in the crossover. The design is actually more complex than we would have liked, but very elegant, and it works extremely well, and it's made out of premium components, and it's all mounted on a custom-designed fiberglass circuit board, which in turn screws to the rear panel that your terminals are on. So you unscrew those six screws, having unscrewed the front four screws out of the drive unit, base mid, and you just pull it all out, pull the tweeter out. So you've got four screws for the base mid, four for the tweeter, six for the terminals, pull the foam out. Boom, you've got an empty box you can paint yourself. That's the point.
So I can buy that version and I can take it home and I can paint it fire engine red.
Yes. Now, okay. Here's an interesting thing. I don't think anyone's ever done this before because no one is stupid enough to do this. And maybe no one will buy it. But It's the perfect answer to I want a different colour, or I don't like your clear-coated birch ply, very light, scandy coloured finish.
Or indeed, I don't like the fancy veneer that you've put on your very expensive speakers. Well, there's that as well.
And maybe
it never comes in the same, in the colour that people want. If you give it to them in walnut, they want maple. If you give it to them in maple, they want black.
Yeah, and maybe you want to touch the speaker and make it your own.
And maybe you want that little, you know, home job that makes it your special project.
Yep. So we give you a spare set of badges. You peel off the I guess you could just...
You could tape around the badge.
No, you wouldn't do that. We actually give it a very light sand before we give it to you. But you will want to... So let's say you want to stain these black, Japan black, which is actually a good choice. You give it a light sand. You're going to have to give it a sand. We've given it a bit of a preemptive sand because it's hard to get into some of the corners. So that's taken care of for you. But before it's assembled, we give it a bit of a quick machine sand, so it's in pretty good shape. You could do it. It's a Sunday afternoon job, basically. So, but you could wax it. You could oil it. You could. What's that other thing you can get? You can stain it. You can clear coat it.
You can paint it, wax it, furniture oil it.
You could wax and polish and dust with Mr. Sheen or something like that.
You can do pretty much anything that you can do with a partly DIY timber project that makes it look the way you want it to look for the aesthetic in your home.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that. So that's the raw version. So that's $22.99. So you've saved $700, you're going to spend, I don't know, you might
half
spend
a Sunday.
Half a Sunday and $100 of materials.
And a visit to Bunnings getting your paint or even wax a proper or paint stain. Store, or a proper paint store or a furniture guy.
We would highly recommend you go to a proper paint store and talk to them about the possible. You take a box in and go, what are your thoughts? Because nothing against Bunnings, it's a great place to shop for yourself. But if you want advice, I think the days of them employing ex-tradesmen seem to be over.
But so, you could go to a furniture guy and you could get furniture oil or furniture wax or something like that that would give it an absolutely unique finish.
Okay, so you got that. So here's a more technical option again, and it's going to sound like a kit speaker because that's what it is. So we supply you. It's not a kit, no. But the box is a kit. So what we do is, and this is at less money again. So this is $16.99, and you end up having shipped to you a flat pack enclosure. So pieces of board straight off our CNC router, and we'll give them the lightest of scuffs to tidy them up a bit if required as far as sanding, but basically it's up to you. So this is for the woodworker who is comfortable with glue and clamping. You put the boxes together yourself. It's pretty obvious how they go together. What we do is we supply you a fully finished crossover, no soldering. So the wiring loom is ready to plug in. The terminals are labelled on the crossover. It's pretty obvious how everything goes. Obviously, we haven't created the video for this yet, but we'll create a video that allows you to understand how it fits together. But it's very, very simple. So
this kit that's not a kit,
but it's for a woodworker. It's
means
not.
Means that
it's
you
not,
can put together your own cabinet.
Yeah.
But the crossover and it basically just plugs in to your finished cabinet the way it plugs into the other two options.
Absolutely. I mean, it would make no sense to do it any other way. We're building the crossovers in production volumes anyhow, and we just take two of those, and you've got your little terminal plate piece of timber. It attaches to that. It screws to the back of the inside of your box once you've built it, and the drivers screw in. Yeah. Drivers, once again, have the wiring attached to them, ready to plug into the board. We supply you the T-nuts, the screws. Of course, we give you everything you need.
So you get everything that you need to be able to do a proper DIY job on this at home.
But I'm going to say it again. If this is your first woodworking project, it's not because it's hard. It's maybe because you just we wouldn't like you to stuff it up. Woodworking doesn't get any easier because the bits are machined to 0.1 of a millimetre. They just go together. The tolerances are just open enough so that everything fits up together beautifully. And there's a pretty simple, straightforward technique to bring the box together with fully mounted corners on the outside. The front and rear baffles just fit in. It's easily, you know, it joints together nicely. It's simple, but this is the, you don't want to stuff it up, I guess.
Probably the bonus of Delacorde being manufactured in its own cabinet factory, essentially, is that you can put together a kit or a part kit like the 1699 version that where you know everything fits together, that the pieces haven't been machined by some overseas company and they've just shipped them to you and you don't know whether they go together or not until the person on the other end is trying to put it together and they've all been machined upside down or back the front.
There's that, but there's the worst thing about speaker kits is that the speaker kit is generally never sold as a finished product. You can't listen to it. You have no idea how it sounds. It may be a thoroughly developed design, or it may be a thrown together half okay thing.
So in this case, you can listen to the finished product and then decide if you want to downgrade from the finished product to a paint yourself, finish yourself, or from there to a build it yourself alternative.
Absolutely. So that's I don't think this is really a thing in the world, and there's probably it is now. There's probably a good reason for it, and we'll find out, I guess. For us, it's not a. This is no more work. We're just handing off some of the work to the person who wants to listen to the speakers. Let them do it and give them a saving in cost.
And we are talking AUD, right? Because you haven't mentioned, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in Siberia, the costs obviously.
I don't think we can ship them to Siberia at the moment because of the war. But you're right. If you are in Europe, we are talking Australian dollars. So
you need to send us an email and go, I'd like a pair of these. How much would this cost?
Well, it'd be very inexpensive. The freight, of course, is expensive, but a flat pack kit is quite affordable.
And these costs are also not inclusive of freight. So
I mean, in euros, $16.99 is probably 1,000 euros, just as a quick, very quick and dirty calculation.
Yeah.
So and probably £900 and probably about $1,000 US. So
all these prices are AUD plus freight and shipping and...
Plus freight and shipping's the catch, yeah. But they include GST, so there's a saving there. So export sales, they work out to be really sharply priced. But but just to clarify, so as a kit, this is a rare bird because this is a fully developed production model that we're very proud of the sound as a finished product. It's more than competitive. It's not necessarily competitive on the aesthetic states, but it's made out of first-class material.
Andrew keeps saying that.
Don't harp on about it.
People who love the way it looks, the way it is.
And that's maybe because it's the real deal. I mean, and what I haven't said...
We're going to have an argument about how it looks because I think it's great.
What I haven't said... I'm not even going to enter into it. What I haven't said is most speakers you buy for this kind of money, $3,000 a pair, are just made out of crap. Let's face it. They're a high-volume thing. They've got inexpensively produced, mediocre quality, but cool-looking drivers. They've got inexpensive parts in the crossovers. You know, very poor quality cord chokes that saturate easily, very poor quality electrolytic or really super cheap film capacitors. They're chucked together on a lightweight circuit board probably, but not executed particularly well. Just all self-tapping screws into MDF, which clearly you take in and out three times and the screw doesn't work anymore, obviously, because the MDF is just chewed out. The MDF quality itself is rubbish. I remember once during the MDF, the famous MDF crisis we had in Australia about 18 months ago, where one of Laminex's production lines and one of the other guy's production lines both broke. And it was in the middle, of course, of a housing boom. And to cut to the chase, I had to basically buy whatever MDF you could get. Now, some smarty for the first time ever decided importing MDF from China would be the way to solve the Australian MDF crisis. So some turns up on the back of a truck, this dark brown looking stuff, which I had never seen before. Most Australian MDF is tan in colour. I said to the guy, "What's that?" He goes, "Oh, I don't know." I said, because he's the truck driver, right?
But he's just delivering the stock.
Said, that looks like China spec crap to me. And the reason why I know what China spec crap looks like is because that's the colour of the inside of most of the affordable loudspeakers that I've ever worked on, is they have this dark brown colour MDF.
And when Andrew says he works on it as hi-fi and stereo, the hi-fi repair and service arm.
That is our repair division. Thanks for that.
Of the whole thing.
So you see inside these things, and the thing is, you know that the board is poor quality because you have to unscrew the drivers to perform a repair, and you don't get to put them back in more than twice because the core of this board. And by the way, we got the material off the truck. I machined a sheet some week or so later. It was for acoustic treatments, so the quality of the board was not critical, perhaps. But interestingly, when you machined it, so you open up the core of the board, it's just dry and dusty, and it's like a cross between, I was going to say Weet-Bix, but that's more particle board. But it's just brown dust, so there's less resin in it. So they've made it cheaper. Surprise, surprise. They've worked out how to make it cheaper by putting less resin in it. And they've worked out how to make it faster by putting less resin in it. And so on the outside, it looks like normal MDF, but it just isn't. And you machine it. And as soon as you machine it, you can just break it over your knee.
So
it has no strength.
Have we gone sideways now complaining about Chinese spec MDF?
What we were trying to say was that what people don't realise is for $3,000 you basically get a piece of crap. Now, that it may make produce quite reasonable sound, and it probably does, and that's what its main chore is. But if you want something that's actually made out of very nice materials that will simply last and, in turn, I think, perform better in the first place, then this is more the product you should be looking at.
And you can call the manufacturer, the designer, and you can talk to them about the product, any questions that haven't been answered on this long and involved podcast. I mean, that's one of the pleasures of buying direct, is that you actually get to talk to the designer. You don't have to go to a hi-fi show and in order to speak to the designer of the product. You can call him up and ask him about the 70S and order one to take home and listen.
Just the one.
Well, you'd like to have
they
two.
They come in left to right, handed pairs.
They tend
so
to
which
come
one
in a
you
pair,
want?
But
oh,
you,
buy a pair.
You know, we'd have one. When I say one, I mean one pair. Of the 70S. But, you know, people are going to have to, originally, they're going to have to come to the Hi-Fi show in Melbourne and have their very first look and listen and see what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, look. Thank you for listening. I think we have rambled, for over an hour. Yeah, well, I like a good ramble.
Yeah,
it's I'm good at it, and I like to do it. I think part of the problem is there's so many things to cover, and I don't want to sound, by the way, that I'm down on Chinese manufacturing. I'm not. They make fantastic things. I just mean products made with price as the number one goal and, you know, profit as the number one goal, and to achieve that, you will make it in China, because people don't realise just the scale that they do things is, it just makes things so much cheaper. So that's what that's about. It's not about having a crack at China. It's having a crack at the philosophy of the manufacturer, is that they want 90% of the retail price to represent profit and 10% to be the cost of the product. And that's what they do. That's the reality. And that's not what this is.
No, this is, if you're doing artisan / bespoke manufacturing, then you are your product. And so everything that you do, say, are becomes, the product becomes an extension of you. And, you know, if you are interested in quality in sound and quality in manufacturing and quality in raw materials and being Australian and supporting Australian, then, you know, an artisan slash bespoke manufacturer is a very good option.
I can only agree. I mean, well, partly because that's what we are.
And so, that's what we are.
So we're naturally pushing out our own barrow. So look, thank you everybody for listening. I will hand over to Sharon to wrap up because she's the host today. I'm the guest.
Goodbye. But I guess we will see you all at the Melbourne Hi-Fi Show, and where you will see the new 70S and you will hear the new 70S and you will know what the whole podcast has been about, because right now it's a great big secret. And you also will have had a chance to listen to all of the other podcasts on Not an Audio File. And you can come and tell Andrew Hutchison and Brad Serhan, who will be roving around the show, what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear, what you wouldn't like to hear, what we're doing wrong. And, you know, and if you're inside Hi-Fi, if you'd like to be a guest, you can waltz over and put your name down, and Andrew can have a chat to you about perhaps appearing on Not an Audio File as a guest at some stage. Goodbye.
Thank you, Sharon. And, of course, if you wish to meet Sharon, she'll be guarding the door
in the hallway
at 2204. All right. See you soon, folks. Bye.